Good morning, I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along with us today as we talk about age-segregated communities. We'll be talking with Andrew Bleckman, who is the author of Leisureville, Adventures in America's Retirement Utopias, published by Grove Atlantic Press. And let's see if we have Andrew with us this morning. Hello, Andrew.
Hello, how are you?
Great to talk with you.
Well, thank you.
And, of course, we talked with you upon the completion of your most recent book, Pigeons.
Yes, actually, it must have been about last year.
Yes, it was. And that was very enjoyable, and that was begun because you had run into a pigeon racer.
Yeah, that's kind of how my book start. I was just buying a tuna sandwich at a corner bodega in Manhattan, and this book started somewhat similarly. My neighbor right across the street moved to the world's largest retirement community.
And they are Dave and Betsy Anderson.
Correct.
She is 7 years his senior.
Mm-hmm.
They put their house up for sale, and that led you on a goose chase to their new location in Central Florida.
Yeah, it's the world's largest retirement community. It's about 1.5 times the size of Manhattan. It has 100 miles of golf cart trails. It's going to grow out to a population of 110,000 people, but no kids are allowed.
No children allowed.
Well, they're allowed, but only with guest passes, and those guest passes time out, much like international visas do.
Well, let's talk about the villages. You've got at least 75,000 residents now, spanning three counties, two zip codes, more than 20,000 acres, and it's subdivided into dozens of separate gated communities.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of, it's kind of hard to describe what a village even is, but basically it's just a collection of similarly priced spec houses that are then grouped together and have an additional gate. It's basically a giant sprawling suburb, mm-hmm. but it's gated all the way around it. It has two manufactured downtowns that were created by entertainment specialists. They were themed. And these entertainment specialists work with Universal Studios. Hmm. So there's fake historical markers everywhere. But mm-hmm. the downtowns themselves are actually owned by the developer. So he just closes them down each night. And that's it. No one lives there.
Yeah, you say that last call occurs pretty early in the evening at the nightclubs or bars.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because one of my main characters, a real person, of course, is his name is Mr. Midnight. That's how he goes. That's his nom de guerre, I guess, in dating. And I was wondering if I should really rename him Mr. 930.
Well, the surprising thing about this is that Dave and Betsy Anderson were really interested in this because they are golf fanatics.
Yes.
And,
there's a different, you can play a different course every day of the week for a month and a half, or pretty soon it'll be 2 months.
Wow. So you've got dozens of golf courses.
Yeah, dozens and dozens.
And all connected with golf course trails, and everyone gets around with their golf cart.
Yeah, you can take a golf cart to the hospital. You can take one to the doctor's office. You can take it to Home Depot or Walmart. You can take it to the church. You can take it to the movie theater, everywhere.
Well, the one thing that was interesting was that they invited you to come down and see what life was like in the villages.
Yeah, they did. And I didn't really believe their stories. I mean, I believed their stories, but I couldn't imagine just how outrageous of a place could really exist. And it was even more outrageous than they had described it as. But they described it in loving terms. In fact, my neighbor's wife, Betsy, called it like the Stepford Wives, but for real.
Andrew Bleckman is the author of Leisureville, Adventures in America's Retirement Utopias. It's published by Grove Atlantic Press. You can find more about that at Andrew Bleckman. It's BLECHMAN.com. Or at groveatlantic.com, we'll get you right to the book. Let's invite people to call in, especially if they either have lived in a retirement community or whether they know people who live there or whether they're interested in moving away from the hustle and bustle of normal life with children and getting away into a world without children. And you can do that by giving us a call in Madison at 263-1890 or you can call us toll-free at 1-800-642-1234. And, of course, our email address is talk@wpr.org. We have lines open for your call right now. The Villages provides residents with this world without children. You must be how old to live there?
It's a national or federal law. It's actually the Fair Housing Act that people don't realize actually protects discrimination against children and young families. Whereas, you know, it eliminates against African Americans or Jews or Asians, you know, with the old neighborhood covenants. It actually protects it against children. You have to be age 55 or older, at least one person in the family, and no one under 18 may live there ever. If your child or grandchild is orphaned, or someone in your family is orphaned, they cannot come in to live with you. You have to move out.
Mm-hmm. Children can come and stay for a few days. What's the restrictions on that?
Well, it depends. Each community is a little bit different. There's now, you know, close to 1,500 of these communities. Now, of course, this is the biggest one. There's about 1,500 of them across the United States. The restrictions vary, but generally they tend to be about 30 days, after which that's it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot like an international visa, I guess is the best way to...
Talk about your trip down to Florida the first time.
Well, you know, first of all, I'd never been to a retirement community. I mean, I'm not quite 40 yet, so I really didn't know what to pack. I just wanted to make sure I didn't embarrass my neighbors. So I brought Argyle socks and loafers and a sweater vest. what was it like? Well, it was very unusual. I mean, the minute I got there, first of all, the developer himself owns everything. So he owns a city the size, you know, 1.5 times the size of Manhattan. On top of that, he owns all the media. He owns the downtowns. He owns the daily newspaper. He owns the radio station. He owns several TV stations. He even owns several magazines. Unprecedented amount of control down there. And, you know, it's interesting. I was always kind of wondering something in the back of my mind. I wasn't sure what it was while I was visiting there the first week. And I realized that there was music being pumped out of rocks and lampposts. In fact, I used to drive up my golf cart to a lamppost to hear the headlines.
Now, the Villages started as a small trailer park for retirees, as I understand.
It did, actually. And what happened was the owner at the time took a trip out to Sun City to visit his sister. And he was impressed with what he saw, basically selling a lifestyle in the middle of nowhere and versus, you know, trailers. And so he then set about to basically copy Sun City, but he took it to even new levels. For a developer, it was, you know, very impressive at how much he accomplished. But, you know, Sun City, in the book, I traced the entire trend to Sun City, which is about 50 years old. All these were, Sun City and Youngtown were the very first of these age-restricted communities. From what I could tell in human history, it's very unusual to have your elders basically segregated out from a community. It's extremely popular all of a sudden, particularly with the baby boomers coming. 12 million people are expected to live like this, and that's a very conservative estimate in the next decade or so. So you'll get 12 million people basically seceding from society. And what happens is, and that's what I learned when I went to Sun City, is when you segregate people, there's really no good segregation out there. The only thing I can think of is quarantining someone with influenza. When you segregate people, they lose what they have as commonalities. They perceive that they lose, you know, what they share in common.
Mm-hmm.
And Sun City, and this was really the canary in the coal mine for me, Sun City defeated 17 school bond measures in 12 years. The kids at the local school system were going to school in staggered shifts and often in trailers that were doubling as classrooms. Now, eventually, the local school system, some say permitted, some say begged, Sun City to de-annex from the school district so they can at least try to get some funding passed. But, I mean, that's a pretty strong statement. Basically, the residents of Sun City, which is about 30,000, 40,000, you know, strong, basically told, you know, the residents of all the surrounding communities that we don't care about you, particularly not your children.
Andrew Bleckman is our guest, the author of Leisureville, Adventures in America's Retirement Utopias. It's published by Grove Atlantic Press. Retirement is a relatively new phenomenon. I didn't realize how new it was. I mean, the first checks from Social Security were cut in 1940.
Yeah, not only that, but they were very small. They originally just went towards a certain sectors of the economy, like people who worked in factories. The idea was, during the Depression, was to open up jobs to younger generations. And to give the older workers some sort of compensation for it. No, retirement's extremely new. I'm basically, for all of human history, and I believe we're about 40,000 years old, Homo sapiens sapiens, for all of human history, you worked until you couldn't, basically until you died. But with Social Security and pensions and with increasing medical advances, all of a sudden you had a group of people called retirees, and there was basically no road signs. There was no map of what to do with your retirement. And, you know, the other problem is Americans don't really have a lot of interest in their elders, sadly. And a lot of them were basically just kind of left to their own devices if not put into nursing homes eventually, which are always a grim place, or variably. So developers basically filled the void, and you had people like Del Webb, who was a huge builder. He had a lot of experience building missile silos for the U.S. military, as well as the Japanese detainment camps during World War II. So he had a lot of experience building planned communities with the detainment camps, and so he decided to take that and start building housing or communities for older folks. And it was a risky proposition. I mean, how do you sell a mortgage, a 30-year mortgage, to someone who maybe has 10 years to live? And, you know, at the time, all the data suggested that older people did not want to leave their families and that they would be horribly depressed if they did so. Now, interestingly, when he opened up, he had a huge line of people, and about 100,000 people came that first weekend to visit, and he sold out of his homes very, very, very quickly. So all the data was actually incorrect.
Now, he took the idea of Youngtown, also in Arizona, about, 20 miles from Phoenix. And there, Youngtown was created by a man by the name of Big Ben Schlieffer.
Yeah, that's exactly right, yeah. And he was an immigrant from Russia, came over as a child at the turn of the century, the last century. His family was escaping the pogroms. He had asthma, and as an adult, and moved out to Arizona to try to heal it. He would visit back east, and he went and visited an old friend of his in a nursing home in Rochester, and was very depressed by what he found. His idea was to create a community, call it Youngtown, to show that folks aren't old, and allow people to basically age with dignity. And his idea was to keep it cheap, so he put it out in the middle of nowhere at the time. At this point, Phoenix basically surrounds it, but at the time, Phoenix was about 15 miles away.
Now, this is where the first chapter of ARP turned up.
Excuse me?
This is where the first chapter of ARP was established.
That's absolutely right, yeah. AARP was the first chapter. I think it cost about a quarter to join at the time.
It's gone up since.
Yeah, I believe so.
And then they developed Circle City for Jewish oldsters.
Yeah, he did. He was basically a utopian thinker, and he wanted to create one that was even less expensive and was even more, I guess, you could say socialist or communitarian, basically a kibbutz. And he put it even further into the desert, but it failed. It was a really, far-reaching attempt at a utopia, and he wasn't able to sell. Interestingly, I mean, he didn't have his own children, but he married a younger woman who had two children. And apparently, I talked to one of his children, who's now in his 60s. He said he was a wonderful stepfather, and he loved children. And that creating a place for so-called oldsters, that's what they were called at the time, the idea was really just to create a nice environment for them that was affordable. And the lack of children was actually almost like a byproduct of that. But apparently, Schlieffer was very embarrassed by the fact that the people in his community defeated school bond measures as well. You know, where he came from, you always gave to the next generation. You certainly paid and helped provide for education.
Well, that idea has been turned on its head as the Villages was developed. And we'll talk about that and take your calls in just a moment as we talk with Andrew Bleckman, the author of Leisureville, Adventures in America's Retirement Utopias. It's published by Grove Atlantic Press. I'm Jim Packard, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network. Glad to have you along with us as we talk about age-segregated communities. And if you'd like to join the conversation, the number for you in Madison is 263-1890 or toll-free at 800-642-1234. Do you know people who live in one of these retirement utopias? Or do you have plans to move there someday? We'd love to hear from you. Again, it's 263-1890 at Madison or toll-free at 800-642-1234. Andrew, the Villages started as this trailer park for retirees, and talk about Harold Gary Morse, the developer.
Well, a developer, you know, when I started the book and when I went down there, I had no intention of writing about him at all. But his shadow is everywhere. He's really the equivalent of the Wizard of Oz down there, and he's even reclusive. He owns everything. He owns the entire place, and he's created a city in the middle of nowhere that's now a giant region. It's an extremely unusual situation, but I guess what it really points to is just how popular these communities are. And I guess the question is, why are they so popular? Partly you can say secession is fun. You know, taxes are lower. You can play all day. Crime's a bit lower. You can drive your golf cart everywhere you need to go. But I think more importantly, I think people realize is where does one retire? You know, it's a very confusing situation.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people who are retiring have a third of their life left. Now, you got to look at it from a few different points of view. First of all, we don't treat our elders well. They're basically marginalized. I mean, we're fiercely youth-centric in our culture. We don't really respect our elders very much anymore, and often they're thrown into dead-end nursing homes. So these are people who are trying to make their own decisions for themselves to have a good time. Now, secondly, many Americans live in sprawl, in suburban sprawl, and that's really antithetical to aging in place.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how do you age in place when you have to drive several miles to get a quart of milk, let alone to have social contact? It's a very difficult thing to do. I mean, Americans drive 21,500 miles a year, and they're not going up and down the Pan American Highway. They're just going to the store and to work. That's a very difficult place to retire. And the other thing is Americans are generally very transient. We move about 12 times in a lifetime. And how do you go home when your family is blown apart by geography and time zones at this point? Where is home anymore? But also important to keep in mind is the fact that we're not talking about old people. These retirees are not old. Some of them aren't even retired. We're talking about people often the prime of their lives, you know, age 55 and older. Which really at this point is middle-aged.
Mm-hmm.
They call them active adults for a reason. I mean, they're playing tennis, they're running, some of them could run marathons. They just don't want to be around children, and they want to keep their taxes down, which is one of the best things about not being around children. But we have to ask ourselves, what does it mean when 12 million, and that's a conservative estimate, 12 million Americans just withdraw?
One of the interesting things that I found about Gary Morse was his father at one time owned a couple of Border Blaster radio stations.
Yeah.
Just across the Mexican border with Texas, where Wolfman Jack launched his career.
Yeah, the actual founder of the Villages was a very colorful individual. He got his start in selling mail order products out of comic books. The X-ray glasses, the zipper billfolds. The cuckoo clocks, and he was able to parlay that money into real estate and as well as into radio stations. He didn't like the rules. The rules were you can only own so many radio stations. So he had something called a border blaster, which was you put it maybe half a mile across the Mexican border, and it was maybe 50,000 watts or more, and you would just blast it right back across the United States. And that's where Wolfman Jack got his start.
We've got a lot of callers on the line right now, so let's take a few of those, and we'll start off, Andrew, with Sarah in Janesville. Sarah, what's on your mind today?
Well, I'm running down to turn down the radio. Sorry about that. I was just so interested to hear what you were talking about because I live in Janesville, Wisconsin. I just came back from 5 months in Tucson, Arizona, and while I was there, I agreed to house sit for a woman, cat sit, for 2 weeks. And she told me about this wonderful place that she lived, and she just raved about it. And I didn't know that it was a retirement community until I arrived to take care of her cat. I actually went up to her house just a couple of days before they were due to leave and saw what the situation was and came back to the friend's house that I was visiting. And I just burst into tears, and I said, I don't want to go to this place. It's horrible. But I felt that I'd given my word. So I went and I stayed there for 2 weeks, and it was just this alien, surreal experience. It felt like everything had been sterilized. It felt like there was no life there. there actually weren't even any birds singing. And I kept trying to understand what it was that made this place feel so suffocating and so restrictive that I would just get depressed to even come back there. And I realized that part of it was the ground had been bladed, which is a local term, which means all of the plants and everything had just been completely removed. Most of the ground was covered by some kind of substance that's actually a form of gravel. Every plant that was visible to the eye had literally been put there by this one person, this one developer. Everything was the same. The buildings were the same. If you didn't know your house number, you could never, ever find it. And then when you walked out of the gate of this particular community, you were just in a larger community that the developer had put together. Everything looked the same. And after I had been there about 10 days, I went for a walk at night, and I heard an owl call. And I realized it was the first bird I'd heard there in 10 days. So to me, I was just traumatized by being there. I feel like I just had the creepiest experience, and I would never go back there to house sit or do anything.
You know, even stranger, I imagine, is what's missing that we forget, as you point out, how sterile it is. But there's no children, and when you don't have children, the environment's even more sterile, and it could often be. I find it depressing. I have a toddler, and I love being around my daughter. I love being around people of all ages. When you're in these communities, there's basically no children. You might have some visitors, but you don't have any graduation ceremonies. You don't have any birth announcements. You don't have any baby showers. There's no playgrounds. You don't have kids going up and down the sidewalk on their tricycles. It just doesn't exist. It's like, and these places often look like something out of Leave It to Beaver. You can't find a weed anywhere, but there's no beaver.
Sarah, thank you so much for your call and for sharing those thoughts with us. Let's go next to Mike in Brooklyn. Mike, what's on your mind this morning?
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, I know quite a few people from Wisconsin who go to a place called Florida Flywheelers in Florida. It's a kind of a retirement community, but what it is a lot of old tractor and old farm equipment collectors. And what they do is they put up their own buildings, they keep their collection in there, they all stay in their campers on the grounds as long as they put in so many hours a week. But it's a little interesting concept because they all share, some people, they have the golf course and everything. These guys are all collectors and restorers of tractors and stuff. So they gather at their own place. It's near Tampa, and they have a couple shows every year there. But they go down and stay at least all winter, and some of them stay year-round down there.
Are you familiar with that, Andrew?
Yeah, those are called affinity communities, and those are becoming increasingly popular. I'm not sure if they have age restrictions in place or if just they don't have anyone knocking on their door who's under 55 who wants to live there. But basically, it sounds like a lot of fun in a sense. Here are people who share a hobby and a lot in common, and they like to be together. And I suspect that they are maybe in their 60s or 70s, am I correct?
Yeah,
they're a bit older. We're out looking at middle-aged people, such as boomers, who just want to live without children. It's more of an affinity community. That's becoming more and more popular. The question is, how do we retire? Where do we retire? It's become increasingly, America's becoming, a lot of people feel alienated from where they live, and so they're looking for community. And some of these communities will do just that. They provide a sense of safety and a sense of commonality, and, it can be really quite pleasant. But the problem is, what happens when you have very large communities or you have lots and lots and lots of these and children aren't allowed? What happens to society as a whole when people just drop out by the millions?
Mm-hmm. Andrew Bleckman is our guest, the author of Leisureville, Adventures in America's Retirement Utopias, published by Grove Atlantic Press. Mike, thank you so much for pointing out the affinity communities. And let's go to Joe in Madison next. Hi, Joe.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. And actually, after listening to the past two callers, or especially the first caller, I think a lot of my comments are going to repeat that. My mother-in-law lives in the Villages in Florida, and she's 77 years old. She's very healthy for her age. She's very active. And when she moved from the Milwaukee area to the Villages, she completely fell in love with it. And we went to visit her for the first time, and we were just stunned by what we saw. And it's a lot of what you said before. Golf carts everywhere, never a dull moment. I mean, my wife and I were literally envious of the lifestyle these people were leading. And everybody's happy. They're waving to each other. There's music emanating from speakers on the city streets. There's happy hour every night at the town square with live music. If you're of retirement age and you're looking for some activity with people in your own demographic niche, or however you want to define it, this is the place to go. But you know something? After a couple of days, there was just something about that whole development. I couldn't put my finger on it, but it was just weird. And it was, as the first caller pointed out, exceedingly sterile. And I started thinking about it, and it dawned on me that that demographic group of people, I suppose, grew up in an era where consistency was everything. They didn't job hop. They were grateful to have a job for 30 or 40 years, I suppose, like my dad did.
Mm-hmm.
And now that they're retiring, why not enjoy life? If I were to retire, I think I would have great fun for about the first 6 months, but after that it would wear thin because there's no diversity. I mean, it's a bunch of white people that demographically probably all earn roughly the same amount of income. Everybody's living in a vinyl-sided ranch house. There isn't a dandelion to be found on the entire, I don't know what it is, 60,000 square miles or whatever. It's an enormous place. I'm thrilled that my mother-in-law is happy there. There's nothing like that in the Milwaukee area, much less Madison. I wish my father would go down there, but he's not as active.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, I just could never imagine living in a place like that. So I appreciate the time, and I'll just take your comments off the air.
All right, Joe, thanks.
You know, in a lot of ways, it is a paradise for a lot of people. There's no doubt about it. I mean, how wonderful is it that you take, you know, that your parents go somewhere, and also you don't have to worry about them anymore. You know that they're active. You know that they have company. Something goes wrong, they can take a golf cart to the hospital. But the reality is, it's utopia, and utopias fail, and you know it comes at a price. These people are basically attempting to live in a bubble, and you can't. I mean, if you look at, if you look at Biosphere 2 in the Arizona desert, which was a utopia, like a false Earth.
Right.
Even they had to pump in oxygen eventually. You know, and the reality is these communities don't age well. Sun City is not aging well, and it's leading to a tremendous amount of strife. Now, I found this fascinating. You know, it's certainly clear that the folks living in these communities don't want to have a lot to do, certainly in Sun City, with any of the children outside the community. They don't want to pay for them nothing. They don't want them in their recreation centers. They don't want to share. Now, interestingly, I would call that generational warfare to a certain extent, or at least strife. Now, interestingly, the older old at Sun City are now fighting with the younger old. The older old don't want to pay for renovating any of the community centers, the recreation centers, whereas the younger old are still very active, and they feel a need to renovate the place or it's going to die. It just won't attract. There's too many of these communities out there, and Sun City won't attract any new homeowners if they don't fix themselves up, and then it just dies. It turns into a necropolis. Now, interestingly, the older olds, old people, don't have to pay for any of the renovations. Their biggest gripe is that it will increase the value of their home. So here you have it, even within the community, the generational warfare, let alone between, you know, what you really think of more classically as generations, where you have, you know, parents, children, grandparents.
Andrew Blechman, our guest, the author of Leisureville, Adventures in America's Retirement Utopias. Got a couple lines open if you have questions or comments that you'd like to add to the program. In Madison, the number 263-1890, and otherwise it's toll-free at 800-642-1234. In the book we mentioned earlier, you'll meet Mr. Midnight and the transsexual Wendy Marie. You'll go to Katie Bell's in Spanish Springs for a little nighttime entertainment. That's where it all happens. Huh?
Yeah, you know, it was a heck of a nightlife. I was rather surprised. Actually, one of my lead characters, I was saying, it was Mr. Midnight, and I spent a week living with him, you know, as he calls it, the mothership to live the life. And I was surprised. I hadn't really thought about it, but basically there's a tremendous amount of partying and sex going on. These are folks who aren't really concerned about pregnancy. And, you know, a lot of them are either widowed or divorced. or don't care too much about that. And STDs are actually the most at risk population or growing population are the elderly or the so-called older generations, because they have tremendous amount of unprotected sex. Most nights the downtown was full until it closed at 9:30, but then there was always a few after hour spots where you can drive your golf cart drunk to maybe a karaoke bar at one of the bowling alleys or something, and then they were out until 1:30 in the morning. And I mean, what I liked about that to a certain extent was that it smashed a lot of stereotypes about people growing old. Here you have people growing old having enjoying themselves, having sex, and going out, not sitting at home listening to a police scanner. Once again, they're living in a bubble where they can do this. It's basically a college campus with no classes. In fact, 99% of the of trips that people take, the transportation departments would say, every time you leave your driveway and leave your neighborhood, you're taking a trip. 99% of those trips remain within the villages. People don't leave once they're there. It's basically a cruise ship.
Let's go to Bridget in Burlington next. Hi, Bridget.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. This is such an interesting topic. We went down to Naples this past year for spring break. I'm in my mid-30s, and my parents are looking for a place to retire. And we went down there, and they have a couple of relatives that live in similar communities. And I thought maybe your guest could talk about the socioeconomic factor a little bit more. You touched on it before. Most of the people that were in these communities are middle class, upper middle class, wealthy people. They were referred to as PIPs, previously important people. And some people were saying that, like you're saying, they're in this bubble and they're completely removed from, you go shopping in the community, all your entertainment is in the community, and then you have this enclave of wealth. And like you're saying, there's just a reluctance to want to contribute to any kind of social services or community funds or fees or any of that sort of thing. And I thought maybe your guest could talk about that some more.
It's interesting. Since writing the book, I've had, some positive emails from villagers, but this is, of course, designed for a national audience. It's not really designed for them. So it's just a microcosm. But I've also had a few emails. I had one that said, quit your whining, pay for your own damn kids' education. We're tired of paying our taxes.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what you're looking at. At base, you're looking at people who really don't. It's almost like Thoreau, but like oddly perverted in a less noble manner. These are people who will pay their taxes, but they want it to go where they want it to go, end of story. Communities need children, and children need schools, and that's just a fact of life. Now, the generation that's retiring now, they're the healthiest and wealthiest generation in human history. Now, that didn't happen by accident. It was given to them by other generations who made tremendous sacrifices through two world wars and a Great Depression, precisely so this generation would have it better than they did. Now they're looking to opt out. They're leaving their communities behind, and they're looking to see where they can go to contribute the least. And it's depressing in a lot of ways. It's understandable and it's legal, but it is also depressing. And like I said, I think fault, if you want to assign blame, falls on both sides of the coin. I mean, we as a society just don't care about our elders. But, then again, a lot of these people aren't old.
Bridget.
And they're not necessarily all wealthy. The villages start out as a trailer park.
Right.
So a lot of them are, bought their homes in the 70s for $10,000. Just basically they're trailers, or single-wide, double-wide, on little postage stamp properties. But it's getting more and more expensive and fancier. But then again, the generations get more and more wealthy as you go on. I mean, my parents certainly lived much more modestly, and certainly my grandparents did, than I do now. Not that I have a lot of money, but I expect a lot. That's my generation. We expect to have things. So it's a mix down there. But I would say it's somewhat of a mix. And generally, it's the oldest section, they call it the old burial ground. It's actually called Orange Blossom Gardens, is where the actual oldsters are. And that's the only place you'll actually see hairnets and people with walkers and canes. Because there really are no old people there yet. But eventually there will be old people, and eventually the communities can have the same kind of generational strife that that happens at Sun City, as well as the fact that it can turn into a necropolis. Older people on fixed incomes aren't as keen on reinvesting in their communities. although plenty do in my hometown. But if you look at, if you're looking at a town or a community, really, this is 1.5 times the size of Manhattan, you know, and about 10 times, no, about 15 times larger than where I live in terms of population. These people aren't going to be that eager to reinvest in their community. I mean, who are they reinvesting for? They're reinvesting for the next wave of retirees, and they're not really interested in that. So what happens is these communities start getting really ragged around the edges. They stop attracting new homeowners, and the utopia just kind of falls apart.
Bridget, thank you very much for your call. Mary's in Campbellsport, and hi, Mary.
Hi. I can't. I'm a seasonal resident of the Villages, and we just returned after 4 months. And some of the issues that he's talking about are true as far as utopia and a bubble, and it's beautiful. But I beg to differ with the fact about not contributing, because there is a wealth of educated and talented people there who give back in many ways, and as far as fundraising activities for different, cancer research and habitat, and there's a wealth of people contributing in many ways there with their talents.
I would agree that there's certainly you know, I mean, let me put it this way. I like most everyone I met down there. So, you know, I'm not here to pick on the Villages, let alone the Villagers. You know, it's understandable why they would want to live there. B, it's enjoyable, you know, living there for someone who enjoys that sort of atmosphere. And there are a lot of wonderful people down there, many of whom are, you know, extraordinarily educated. Anything, it saddens me to see them dropping out to live in, you know, this, because I think there's so much to give back. Yes, there is some giving back, but I wouldn't say it's an extraordinary amount. Usually the giving back is geared around a party, so that they're having a good time and they try to raise money. But it's often the good time that's really drawing a lot of people. Yes, they are raising some money for things like cancer research. And, you know, I don't want to minimize the fact that some people are doing charity. Charity is always welcome. But I don't think that's going to make up for the fact that there's kids, you know, in the surrounding areas that are peering through the gates wondering, you know, what's going on inside and why they're not allowed to live there, and why they're looked down upon when they are there. And, you know, what's going to happen with these kids who are looking through the gates when they grow older, and they see these seniors playing there all their lives and not wanting necessarily to contribute to their school costs. And what's going to happen to these kids when it comes to paying off Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and $10 trillion worth of debt? I'm not sure how generous these kids are going to feel. You know, if you separate people, they lose a sense of commonality. I just, at heart, it just doesn't feel healthy to me.
Mary, thank you so much for your call. And Andrew, thank you so much for spending the time with us this morning. It's been a very enjoyable read, Leisureville, Adventures in America's Retirement Utopias. And I hope that people get a chance to pick it up and give it a read.
Thank you very much.
All right. Andrew Bleckman, the author of Leisureville, Adventures in America's Retirement Utopias, published by Grove Atlantic Press. Obviously, an interest in a lot of people. I'm sorry we couldn't get to all of the calls today, but we ran out of time. And thanks to Keisha Mabra for on-air phone production. I'm Jim Packard. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.